All right. Well, what we've been talking to a lot of artists about is, as comics move into being print and digital, is that affecting the way that you create? How are you approaching that?
Well, okay. So I've had no experience with the digital universe with comics. I don't read them digitally. I just prefer them on paper. I know it's, you know, wasteful of trees, etc. But I genuinely find the experience more gratifying on paper. But that said, somebody showed me the comics. I think it's, what's the app? Comixology. Yeah. Somebody showed me the app, and it was really interesting how it went kind of from panel to panel, and it was neat. I think. It hasn't affected the way that I work. I still like comic books looking like they're from the 1950s and 60s. That's just the way that I make comics, and that's the way I want them to look. But it hasn't affected. I think that it's good. I think that it, you know, opening up the market to a younger generation that's a more tech savvy than, you know, any of us who are over the age of like 25. Ace.
When you're say you haven't really experienced it yourself.
Yeah.
Is this something you're thinking to yourself, I want to try that, I want to give that a shot, I want to see if that's different and challenge myself in a different way?
No.
No?
I'd like to say yes, but I find the work challenging enough as it is and gratifying enough as it is that I don't feel like I need to change it to fit a mold that I don't necessarily understand. Like I think the mold of digital comics needs to fit the medium more than the medium feeding the mold, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So comics, I think, need to stay comics.
Yeah.
And whatever application they fit into after the fact, I think needs to come after the fact. Like, I think it's like with a 3D movie. Like, if you're setting out to make a 3D movie from the outset, make it 3D. Don't make it 3D after the fact.
Well, what if you get do like SCTV and you get that dude? You know, and that, what about? It's not obvious at all.
I know. What was he called? It was Dr.
Was it the House of
Dr. Tongue?
Dr. Tongue.
Dr. Tongue.
The 3D House of Pancakes.
Yes, that was it. House of Pancakes.
And it was John Candy, right?
Yes, that's right.
So
brilliant. It was brilliant.
Part of Monster Chiller Horror Theater.
I love that you know that. That's so good. Yeah. Oh,
excellent.
Dr. Tongue.
I'm gonna be
this will only play well in Canadian podcast listeners.
This will. That's all right. I'm going to be watching some of this on YouTube tonight because I know it's on there.
Yeah.
Well, when you're looking at it from a change in the marketplace, and you said it's already challenging enough. So what are the challenges then? What do you find most challenging when you're going to start a new book?
That's a good question. A lot of it is just the startup in a new book. Like, I'm working at Oni right now on a series with them, and it's just, you know, everything, like, coming out of a series that I did with Image, The Intrepids, into something new, it's just you kind of have to change your mindset because the concept is so radically different. So that's a bit of a challenge, just kind of being open enough to make things look different because the material is completely different, but still keeping, you know, sort of that underlying style that I hope eventually defines my work. So that's, you know, probably just that shift from series to series is the biggest change.
I think your style, it's not a realistic style, but it is a real world style, if you know what I mean, and that it feels natural and relatable and instantly. So how did you kind of come to that or work on that? When you first started drawing, did you say, I know what kind of artist I want to be, or is it something that just developed over time?
Well, it evolves over time. I mean, and I appreciate that. That's very kind to say because, like, you know, there are guys like Darwin Cook who, you know, has a very animated approach to the way that he draws, but there's still things very recognizable. Like, he draws environments, I think, better than, you know, 90% of artists because, like, he's just drawing them, from what I can tell, straight out of his head, and they look like what they're meant to look like. Like, he'll draw a train yard in Hunter. It looks like a train yard, but it's not traced or anything. I'm not against artist tracing, but I do think that there's a stiffness in a traced image, whereas, like, if you look back at the 60s and the Alex Toths and the Steve Ditkos and Kirby, you know, those guys were just kind of making it up, you know. Like, I try to use reference anytime I can, but it's reference to help influence what I'm trying to draw.
Well, that was a thing that all the comics took place in New York because all the creators lived there and they could look out their window for their reference material.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you'd see, you know, you'd get like, I think it was Kirby's, was it Commandy?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it was still New York-based, but it was a decrepit New York. But, you know, making something decrepit is much easier than making it, you know, futuristic or whatever. But, but no, like the real world relatability, like I use a lot of reference photos just because, you know, there are things that I don't feel like I can confidently make up. You know, certain wrinkles in clothes, I know I can use a photo much better than just kind of, oh yeah, this is what it's supposed to look like. I'm still pretty green at this. Like I've only been doing it since March professionally. So, I mean, yeah, with my new series, like there's a lot, you know, there's more locations that are, recognizable as a place, whereas my book The Intrepid's, like, a lot of it was futuristic science fiction, whatever. You can make that up a little bit easier.
How can you get your and like I said, I didn't want to take too much of your time, but this is fascinating. So when you get a script from a writer, how quickly are you able to visualize what they want? Does it, do you kind of ruminate at it, go through it a few times, or is it immediately you can it in your head and start to work on it?
It really depends on how the quality of the script. I have received scripts from writers that are just so profoundly bad that it's, I could spend, like... I'm not giving any names. But they're so, like, they're just so underprepared and under-researched that as a artist, like, you can't... You should be able to get a visual from this script right away, which is sometimes, I don't know how guys in the 60s at like Marvel Comics, when they were doing that, when, you know, Stan Lee would say, I gave them a paragraph of information, how they visualized anything. Like that to me is amazing. But the good scripts that I've received, like, you know, will give times and locations and, you know, you're set in a certain era, you know, they'll say, you know, we'd like this automobile to look like this, you know, we're at this type of restaurant, so it immediately gives you sort of an, oh, okay, you know, like, if you were to say as a writer, like, you know, it's set in a McDonald's, well, you at least know what that looks like, right? I'm vegan, I would never go into a McDonald's, but I remember what they look like. So yeah, the good scripts already have a predetermined idea of what they want to look like. Writers who really know their craft know how to convey a visual to an artist.
Do you still feel that you get a level of creativity, though, if you have that much detail given to you on what the writer wants?
Now, that's a good point, because I have received scripts that are too detailed, where it's like... you know, figure A appears in the foreground, figure B like 3 feet behind figure A, you know, there's a light post, you know, 20 feet away from them, and it's just like, what am I supposed to do with that? That's so detailed that it's not fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, the good scripts set a tone, I guess, more than an actual like structure. So you get a tone from a script really, really early on. Like the script I'm working on now with Oni, it feels very kind of, you know how Pulp Fiction was a 1990s movie, but it felt kind of 70s.
Yeah.
That's the vibe that I got from this script. So visually, that's what I'm trying to give it, like setting it in a contemporary period, but making it feel a little bit older.
That grindhouse feel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, grindhouse, completely contemporary, but it feels like it's a 70s pick.
Yeah.
And I think comic books are like that a lot. Like, I think comic books have that versatility where you can make something very contemporary with, you know, cell phones, whatever, but it can feel like a 1960s, like, visual.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares. It's a versatile medium. It could be used a lot more.
Well, you can do whatever you want without a budget.
Yeah.
Is the thing. So that's, you know.
Yeah.
And if you have the talent and the time to be able to pull it off, then you can make it what you want it to be.
And desire, if you have that desire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you feel, what about a pressure on a deadline then? When are you sometimes it does happen, you go, I'm not happy with this, but I don't have a choice anymore. What is that? I imagine that kind of feels like...
It's the worst feeling.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you just have to walk away. Like, I had one panel on my new project that was just killing me. It was affecting the entire layout of the page, and I just could not pull the trigger on this one panel. I must have redrawn the page 3 times. It was like I got like halfway through the inks.
The entire page or just the panel?
The panel, but it affected the layout of the page. So the layout had to change. So it was one of those, like, I was talking to my editor and I was saying, I'm sorry, this one is just killing me, but it needs to be right because it's kind of a crux in the story. I don't know if crux is the right word, but anyway. And so I finally, you know, it put me a few days behind. Normally you don't want to do that, But in this case, I kind of felt like I have to. But yeah, deadlines do make a big difference. That's why you do get a lot more artist tracing. You know, I use way more reference than I'm sure Ditko and Kirby ever did. But they were also much better artists than I am. So yeah, deadline does play into it huge. But I guess, you know, some guys' styles are, you know, much more tapered down to kind of meet deadlines a little bit faster. And, you know, some people, you know, do just, you know, completely, not even trace, you know, they'll drop in pictures in the background, which is okay. I think it works sometimes.
Well, what about when you see a Mark Bagley and you know he can draw 75 books a month?
Yeah.
does that blow your mind?
And
he's quite good too.
Yeah, Mark Bagley's pace more than anything is just, I think, unreal. Like, I think John Romita Jr. is the same. Like, yeah. I think he's very fast.
Yeah.
And they blow me away just based on like their ability to turn them out. Riley Rossmo, same thing. Like, he's very fast.
Yeah.
And his style's very accommodating to that. So it blows my mind. I'm not as fast as those guys yet. Again, I'm pretty new, but.
That's okay. I mean, you know, it's, I can't remember the name of the book, but there's a novel that talks about how many hours you have to put in before you master something. And, you know, I mean, it's,
I read an interview with, I want to say it was Marcos Martin, whatever, artist on Daredevil, Amazing Spider-Man. He did Batgirl Year One. And he said it was something like 500 pages before you kind of come into your own.
Or
1,000 pages. It was like, it was a huge amount. Yeah. So
yeah,
I'm only at like 150 pages, so I've got a ways to go.
You look exhausted with the thought of putting in 1,000 right now.
It's been a long day, but oh, it's the best job ever.
Yeah, you know what? It's the best job ever, actually, is for us to read it. So one thing I want to ask you, because you mentioned Jack Kirby a couple times now. Now, as a person who's not an artist, as a person who couldn't draw my own face, you know, with a circle, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but what I'm saying is, yeah, exactly. I'm not, no artistic ability in that way. So when I look at him, I'm wondering if I'm seeing the same thing that an artist like you is looking at. What do you see from Kirby? I mean, I'm blown away by the detail and the imagination. That's the things that just, the little details, the small things that nobody else puts in. And then just the imagination to create those things in the first place. That's what blows me away about Kirby.
Well, the thing is, before Kirby hit, like, you know, kind of hit the scene with, like, Fantastic Four was his first book of Marvel. Like, if you look at anything in
the Marvel monster books before,
Adam. Yeah, and he did a lot of Westerns.
Yeah.
There was just, like, there's nothing that you can relate his work to. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing in comic books that's kind of a natural progression of, like, okay, this is what Kirby was looking at. Kirby kind of just hit, and it was just all of a sudden, you know, where the hell did any of that come from? Because it's fascinating to look at, like, what was I reading of his recently? It might have been The Avengers, and there was a scene, he drew a gun, and it doesn't look the way a gun looks, because none of his stuff was ever photorealistic, but it was always an interpretation of what was real, and it was such a beautiful and elegant interpretation that for me, it's like, I just don't know how to make that leap from, you know, object to, this is my beautiful Jack Kirby interpretation of that object. He drew a gun more interesting and in a more interesting and creative way than I've ever seen anybody else draw, like a firearm.
And that's just the gun.
And that's
and
just
then
the gun.
All the other stuff in the panel.
And that's, you know, there's, and you know, he was just so innovative.
Yeah.
And you know, I think a lot of people don't give those guys the credit enough. Like Steve Ditko, also so innovative, but you know, people just don't really think back to that. There's this sort of disassociation with, you know, where comic books started. You know, I think it was in the mid to late 80s, people started, you know, criticizing Kirby's work, like, oh, his proportions are wrong. His proportions are right on, it's just he makes them dynamic.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's called foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Like, you can criticize it, but like, without a Jack Kirby, like, comic books as a form now doesn't exist. Like, he created the language that, you know, has just become happenstance for us.
So who else is it besides Kirby and Ditko that you look at and go, nobody else did that before? They were the first to do that, and that's influence, and that inspires me.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, Milton Caniff. I never know how to pronounce his name. It was fantastic. Alex Toth, I think, broke the mold. A lot of those old guys basically just pick up an issue of Creepy number one. And those are the guys that, you know, I think influenced what comic books should be. I think we've moved away from that. Like, I think there's been a big influence of, you know, what was popular in the 90s and sort of the late 90s coming into now. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's just, for me, as what drew me to comic books as a kid, that's not it. Like, my favorite... one of my favorite comic book when I was a kid was a Charlton comic called The Many Ghosts of Dr. Graves. Number 12, might be number 8. It's a Steve Ditko. Dr. Graves was basically, like a creepy where Dr. Graves would introduce a series of vignettes. But it was interesting. And I mean, Ditko did, you know, really fascinating stuff with that sort of Doctor Strange world, and he did it with Dr. Graves. And it was, to me as a kid, it felt like a comic book. Mm-hmm. Whereas as beautiful as I think Neil Adams' work is, like as an example, Neil Adams is much more realistic. You know, very highly detailed, very highly rendered, kind of like your Brian Hitches and everything, who are amazing artists. Far better than I will ever be. But for me, as a comic book reader and comic book fan and comic book creator, I guess, I feel like books... I like books that look more like what Ditko and Kirby and Toth were doing, and I think guys like Paul Grist and Darwin Cook do that now. And my hat's off to them, because
Will Eisner?
Will Eisner, yeah, Will Eisner was amazing. And you know, there aren't that many creators now who make books that look like that. And the ones that do, for me, really stand out.
This might be a question I'm not sure if it's going to fit here, so there might be some editing coming, but hopefully it will fit. So you're an artist, and you talk about all these... Like, I see you put a lot of thought into what you're doing. So how have you read Understanding Comics?
Yeah. Oh, and Scott McCloud.
Scott McCloud. How many times have you read it? Is it a huge influence? Do you look at that and go, that explains to me what I'm supposed to be doing here? Is it a reference point in those ways? I think that book, again, I couldn't draw a stick.
Yeah.
I couldn't draw a stick if I had a stick in front of me.
Yeah.
But I look at that book and the psychology of it, and I understand it, the way he presented it, and I just think it's fascinating. I wonder if it helps an artist as well.
I teach a course in Calgary at ACAD. It's a comic book, you know, storytelling class, and I use that book as just my basis for the students, you know, to read and kind of understand how to tell a story sequentially, because it's incredible. Like, there's things that he would point out that I just kind of didn't even think. Like, you know, I always saw them in books, but until you see it broken down into a language, like into the language of comic books, it was just always sort of a vague notion that we all had. But he, you know, he stamped it and said, you know, this is what this means. Like, you know, this is what a non sequitur is. I always knew what a non sequitur looked like, but there was no label for it.
Yeah.
So it was fantastic for me. It's like, you know, it was like reading, a textbook for, an English course or something. It was...
But an enjoyable textbook.
A very enjoyable textbook. No, it's fantastic.
And Reinventing Comics as well is... have you read that one as
well? I haven't.
You haven't? It, you know, came out quite a while ago. I mean, I think it was probably a dozen years ago. But he's actually talking about things in there that he foresaw some of the changes that were coming in digital comics and that type of thing. He's already on the cutting edge of those things. I'm waiting for a third volume. But I mean, he's just, his ability to break down and analyze things is interesting. So, as is yours. So I don't know if, Keith, anything else you want to contribute here? It's been so much.
I have one last question. The Oni comic, is it a color or is it a black and white?
Right now it's color. I'm going to be coloring it as well, which is so much extra work. But it's one of those I'm not sure where to take it color-wise just yet. Like, I'm still about 100 pages away from finishing the drawing process, so it's going to be kind of one of those, what are the colors going to look like? Are they going to be minimal, like what Darwin Cook is doing on Hunter? Or is it going to be more conventional, like, you know, your standard, you know, superhero book? It's going to be color, I just don't know to what degree.
I do have a follow-up there? You mentioned before that sometimes you've gotten a script and it's just not very good.
Yeah.
How do you approach that from a work ethic point of view? Do you think I'm going to do the best with this regardless? Or is it difficult to put your heart and soul into something when you see that that's not of high quality?
I've been pretty fortunate in that I've been given a lot of scripts, and you know, Image was really supportive, and Oni has been really supportive, that I've kind of had a bit of a choice. So there have been scripts that I have received that, you know, people want to work on. You know, they've seen what I do, they like it, and they want to work with me. But just because I get it doesn't mean I have to work on it. And I think that that's probably a mistake that some younger artists have been doing this for 6 months. But you don't always have to jump at the first thing that comes your way. Like, if, you know, as an artist, you're professional enough and it looks good enough, just bide your time until you're passionate about something. Like my book with Oni, I am passionate about. Like, I love the script. Like, it was a script that I read, and I hit a point halfway through where I was laughing too much that I had to stop and literally walk away, and then come back, because like I couldn't laugh that much more reading a script.
What's the genre again of this book?
I don't know. I describe it as an Elmer Leonard novel meets Kill Bill meets Animal House. It's about a it's about a football player who, the big game of the year, he knocks out the opposing team's mascot, is subsequently suspended from the league, and then the story picks up 10 or 15 years later, and all these celebrity athletes are getting attacked by sports teams' mascots, and our main protagonist, the man who was kicked out of the league, he also was attacked, and the story just kind of unfolds from there as to why.
What, sorry, we're going on forever, but like,
okay.
What mainstream characters would you like a crack at? Somebody who's been in the business for just a short period of time.
Okay, Ted Kord's Blue Beetle. I can't believe he died, and I remember I read that issue, and like as soon as I got to the scene where Max shoots him in the head, I launched that comic across the room. I've never been so upset reading a comic book as I was with that one. Ted Kord's Blue Beetle, I would love to do like a year one with him, where it's just kind of out of context now. Doctor Strange, Batman, the Terrible Trio. I did a commission for a fellow, and it just, I love the way it turned out. It was something about drawing animals' heads on like business suits. I'd love a crack at, you remember Matt Wagner's Batman and the Monster Men?
Yes.
Batman.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that, but it's like Batman and the Terrible Trio.
Yeah.
Just as a mini series, that'd be fantastic. What else?
I know there's at least one of our listeners who wants your Blue Beetle comic.
Oh, really?
We've got one. Yeah, I know one of our regular listeners is a ridiculously huge Blue Beetle fan. Ted Kord.
My favorite character is Booster Gold.
Booster is fantastic.
Yeah, my all-time favorite character is Captain Marvel, Shazam, and I think your style would really, really suit that. Yeah, I think that would be really a great fit. So, well, I think I probably could come up with another 50 questions, but it's getting quite late, so we really want to thank you very much,
no,
Scott.
No, thank you guys. I really appreciate you waiting around.